Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Happy Friday. Today we are going to be talking about a new Model Y configuration opening up for order in Europe. We've also got news from SpaceX that does involve Tesla with that T-Mobile partnership that SpaceX announced last night. Also got some news on, a little bit more news on that Giga Berlin tour, which we also covered yesterday, a new Panasonic factory rumor, and a couple other items as well. So not the best day for the stock today. Tesla down about 2.7% on the day to close at $288 post-split. The Nasdaq, though, was down 4% on the day, so actually Tesla not performing all that bad in terms of relative performance. I mean, you can see here at the bottom, Amazon, Apple, both down more. Nvidia down 9%. I think they had earnings a couple days ago, maybe still affecting that. Microsoft down 3.9%. So Tesla doing pretty well, all things considered. In terms of the more broad market, though, definitely some reaction to Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's comments today after the Jackson Hole Symposium. So we talked about that earlier, I think even last week, as an item to watch for this week. So some comments here that he made that are making the market a little bit more hawkish in terms of their expectations, or in terms of the Fed's expectations for what they're going to do from a policy perspective. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said that they will use their tools forcefully, quote unquote there. A few other items in here that were more hawkish as well. Hawkish, by the way, just meaning less trying to grow the economy. That would be dovish. Hawkish would be more concerned with controlling rates or keeping inflation low. So he also mentioned that they would be focusing on restoring price stability, which would likely require maintaining a restrictive policy stance for some time. The historical record cautions strongly against prematurely loosening policy. So this is a little bit different tone than we've seen Powell take in the previous, I think that would have been the July meeting for the Fed. So even though we've gotten some positive indicators on inflation since then, definitely a little bit more of a negative tone here today from his comments. He also said that we must keep at it until the job is done. So just kind of reiterating that similar point up there. So if we look at the CME Group Fed Watch tool, something that we kind of like to check in terms of the interest rate expectations, when we have talked about this, you know, a week or so ago, the expectations for a 50 or a 75 basis point increase were about split, about a 50% probability for both according to their forecasts. That has now increased up to about 60% for a 75 basis point increase. It's actually not too different than it was yesterday, though, it looks like. So I was kind of curious about that. But if we then kind of look at the expectations for November, which would be the next meeting after September, here we can see that there is a pretty stark contrast. We can see that this, I guess that would be 100 basis point increase range. So you, 250 is a 75 and a 25, whatever it would take to get there. That has gone down in terms of the probability that they were forecasting here from about 43% a day ago, now to just 4%. And you can see the new bracket here, which would be, I think, 150 basis points from where we're at right now. So 275 basis point increases. Sorry about the dog. 275 basis point increases. That's gone from 0% in terms of the probability, which obviously couldn't have been zero before, but now up to about 55%. So really expecting more sustained interest rate increases for a longer period of time after these comments today from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell. So that's what's kind of going on with the broader market in terms of the Fed takeaways today. Getting into the Tesla news, though, we do have some pretty interesting news here for Europe specifically. Tesla has expanded the offering for the Model Y in Europe. They've added the rear-wheel drive Model Y, so we're looking at the German design studio here, but many countries across Europe now having this added, I think, if not every country that Tesla is available in, they've added this rear-wheel drive version. So in Europe, it's about €54,000. It's going to vary by country based on value-added tax, based on some of local incentives. But so far, I've seen price ranges probably in the range of €50,000 up to €60,000 for this variant. Seems to sit slightly above the Model Y in terms of the opening price point. I think there might have been one market where it was a little bit below. I wasn't able to find that exactly for this case. So we'll have to look a little bit closer at that, but that might be an incentive thing, an incentive setup or something like that. But in Germany, it is a little bit more expensive than the opening price points Model Y by about 4,000 euros. If we look at the Model Y in China, so we're looking at the China Design Studio right now, we can see that these have the same specs. So 6.9 second, 0 to 100 kilometers per hour, or 0 to 60, 217 kilometers per hour top speed. Exact same specs here as the, you know, quote unquote, new Model Y that's available in Germany and other places in there in Europe. So to me, even without any other information, this would look like the export from Shanghai version, just the standard range lithium iron phosphate vehicle that Tesla has out of Shanghai. Looks like that's what this is based on the exact same specs. And from what I'm hearing today from some sources, which oftentimes that comes from store information, which sometimes doesn't necessarily have full context or have correct information 100% of the time. But what I'm hearing is that this is from Giga Shanghai, the standard range lithium iron phosphate vehicle. So shouldn't be too different. Makes this a little bit, you know, less exciting news, but Tesla should be able to sell these for a higher profit in Europe. And of course, with Giga Berlin still coming online, I think that's probably a factor in why we're seeing this. And we know, of course, that Shanghai now ramping up production significantly after these upgrades. So probably a combination of both of those things. And then eventually, I'm sure Tesla would switch this over to be production coming from Berlin itself. So that's what's going on with the European configurations. We do also have an update here from Jefferies, just while we're on the topic of Berlin. Yesterday, we talked about the takeaways from factory tours with investor relations from UBS. Today, we're hearing some takeaways from Jefferies. So I've highlighted a couple of interesting points here. Might need to zoom in a little bit. Let's see if I can do that. So this note's a little bit, I don't want to say it's like all over the place, but some confusing things in here. The first thing I've gotten here is that they say that Tesla highlighted that Berlin and Austin ramp will further dilute higher costs from Fremont. So if you think about Tesla's cost mix right now in terms of how it comes in with a vehicle sold, it's going to be higher from Fremont, lower from Shanghai. So what they're saying here is that as Berlin and Austin ramp up, those will be lower than Fremont because of all of the advancements that Tesla has made with Giga Shanghai and then with Berlin and Austin following Giga Shanghai since Fremont. Of course, that's to be expected. They use some percentages in here, and this is why I say it's a little bit all over the place because it's kind of confusing. They say that this would dilute higher cost Fremont by less than 40%. I don't know if they meant by greater than 40% there, kind of confusing, and 25% this year and next. So that whole sentence is just confusing to me. I'm kind of just taking it as a directional comment rather than trying to figure out what they're saying with percentages here. Because then they go on to say 60% cost reduction in unit cost of goods sold over 3 years. And they say 84,000 to 63,000, which would obviously not be 60%. I think they maybe just flipped to this and it should be 36,000 because I think UBS had mentioned that yesterday, but that would be more in aligned with where actually Tesla's costs are. So anyway, a little bit confusing there, but directionally they're saying Berlin and Austin below Fremont, which I think not surprising and should be a significant cost reduction for the overall mix. And if Tesla can maintain their average selling prices, which, you know, we'll see how that goes. But if they can maintain that or anywhere in the ballpark, profitability and gross margins should increase as Berlin and Austin ramp up. So nothing too new there, but they do note that this has been, those cost declines over time have been mainly driven by Tesla's economies of scale, simplification of production processes, not necessarily from just battery costs coming down. We know raw materials prices have caused battery prices to stay relatively similar, maybe even elevated in some cases. So where Tesla's really seeing the cost reduction is, you know, all the other things that they have done over the last decade to make production simpler, more cost efficient. Tesla expects further step down in costs on a new platform in 2024. They say likely a robotaxi, but they did say that, quote, we understand some flexibility on product concept. That part to me was a little bit interesting because I've talked about how going all in on robotaxi, if that is really like the next product, there's some risk there if Tesla's not able to actually solve autonomous driving by that point in time. How does Tesla continue to grow beyond, you know, 4 million, 5 million vehicles per year? That's not necessarily clear, and I think that causes some concern for institutional investors on Tesla's long-term, final state of business if they can't actually solve that and if they don't have other products in the pipeline beyond a robotaxi. So I've talked about that before, but interesting to see Jeffrey saying that there's some flexibility in that regard. Stationary storage, no longer cell-starved. Thought that was interesting, so that's really good news. Investor discussion suggests to us that FSD is no longer central to the investment case. So just to be clear, this is separate from anything Tesla would be saying. They're talking about conversations with investors in Tesla, not investor relations or anything like that. So it's interesting to see that some of the perception there has changed. I think people are realizing that Tesla's growing into its valuation, even setting aside FSD. So that's a positive because that means that we don't need FSD to really make huge progress. to still see the stock kind of move up into potentially a new trading zone. Tesla Insurance, they say they're working, making progress in 10 states. We already know it's in more than that, but they say covering about 80% of the U.S. customer base by year end, which would be, I think we're at around 50% is where we last went through the math. And then they say that Berlin is currently at 1,000 units per week. So that is in alignment with what we had talked yesterday. Somewhere around 1,300 was kind of where we had landed in terms of those different rumors. So this would be in alignment with that, close enough. They say still aiming for 5,000 per week by year end, nothing new there. And full capacity, 500,000 on 4 shifts for 7 days. So again, nothing new there. And that full capacity, that doesn't mean, you know, final forever. That's just kind of what Tesla's working on right now. The other confusing part of this, not super important, but they say mega casting only compatible with structural battery pack. So actual production for rear part with higher productivity expected when structural pack available. Confusing. Tesla obviously doing rear castings without the structural pack for Model Y for a long time. They've been doing that even at Fremont. So they must be talking about the front casting here and just gotten that mixed up, but just kind of highlights that there could be other things in here that got mixed up as well. And then just again, highlighting that limit of model concentration is the $1 trillion question. They talk about Cybertruck. They talk about Model 3 and Model Y capping out at a certain volume. And then what's going to drive that next, next few years of growth for Tesla, if not Robotaxi. So interesting comments there from Jefferies. I don't want to overemphasize too many of those, but good to have that second piece of info in addition to the UBS report yesterday. All right, next here, we've got just a quick thing from SpaceX. I hope everyone got a chance to watch that joint announcement with T-Mobile last night. Pretty exciting stuff. SpaceX with Starlink version 2 is going to be providing connectivity directly to cell phones without requiring any additional hardware from them. So this is pretty amazing technology that SpaceX is going to be using here. T-Mobile getting in on that technology from SpaceX. Elon does note that this is only going to be for a certain zone, only about 2 to 4 megabits per area. So this isn't going to be super high bandwidth. It's not going to be able to support tons of customers doing much beyond sending messages, but still very important to have that option for safety purposes for people in those areas that, you know, no cell service, no Wi-Fi, things like that, without having to have a giant Starlink receiver, just to have your phone that you already have, no special hardware. So amazing technology here. Anyway, you can kind of take that one step further and think about how this could apply for Tesla. Maybe Tesla could access this in the future as well. So that's what Dave Lee is asking here to Elon, and Elon responding yes. So pretty exciting. I'm excited, and I'm a T-Mobile customer. Not advertising or anything there, but it sounds like next year that would be happening. So I'm excited about that and excited to see what this could eventually mean for Tesla too. Because, you know, this 2 to 4 megabits per second, not going to add a ton of functionality for Tesla, but nice to have. But we never know. You know, SpaceX is going to continue to make progress on this, and maybe over time this becomes even better. Tesla and their vehicles could make the connectivity potentially better as well than what a cell phone might get. So certainly a lot of potential and exciting things there in terms of the crossover with Tesla as well. Kind of reminds me, many years ago, I'm sure Adam Jonas is excited about this because he asked about possible angles there with Tesla and SpaceX many years back, and I think he's feeling probably a little bit vindicated by that question with this news. All right, last few items here. We'll go through these pretty quickly, but we know that Panasonic is planning to build a roughly $4 billion battery factory in Kansas. They were considering both Kansas and Oklahoma, and it looks like they're just going to go ahead and do both. Wall Street Journal today reporting that they are in discussions to build an additional roughly $4 billion electric vehicle battery plants in the United States. The company is looking at Oklahoma, and they say people with knowledge of Panasonic's plans describe the two plants as twins with similar capacity. So huge factory going into Kansas, and sounds like going to be a huge factory for Panasonic there in Oklahoma too, which would be obviously quite close to Giga Texas. So exciting to see that for Panasonic. Last couple things, Ford has announced price increases on the Mustang Mach-E. Some places saying this is, you know, $8,000. The headline's a little bit misleading. Some vehicles trims did increase by that, but it looks like some just a few $1,000, you know, $3,000 it looks like for the standard range version of the vehicle. But of course, this shortly following the Inflation Reduction Act, EV tax credit changes, probably not any huge surprise on that front. They recently did this with the F-150 Lightning as well, though they do talk about it being due to material cost increases. And then lastly today, just a quick update on Elon Musk's Twitter case. So the chancellor did rule that, well, let's see. Yeah. So the Court of Chancery said that Elon Musk's demands for some data from Twitter were quote unquote absurdly broad and quote, no one in their right mind has ever tried to undertake such an effort, end quote. I don't know if that's a valid reason to reject a request, but there it is. They also added that, quote, my overall impression is that the plaintiff has agreed to produce a tremendous amount of information to defendants, and that the information plaintiff has agreed to produce is sufficiently broad to satisfy most of plaintiff's obligations. Remember, in this case, Twitter is the plaintiff because they're suing Elon Musk because they want him to go forward with the deal. So Twitter was ordered to turn over, so it wasn't completely denied. Twitter was ordered to turn over data from 9,000 accounts sampled in the fourth quarter. Apparently, they said that that data no longer existed, so it would be burdensome to recreate it, but I guess they're gonna do that. I don't know how they can do that if they're having trouble even, figuring out these bots in the first place. So seems kind of strange, but that is the update that we've got for now on the Twitter case. All right, with that, we are going to wrap it up. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you on Monday for the August 29th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.